Hi, good morning. I have my phone up here. I'm a millennial, so it has my notes on it. So I'm not texting, reading, you know, the news, just so you know. I'm not being rude. Oh, sure. I just want to be upfront with you about that. It's a cultural thing. I am so excited to be with you guys this morning. Tom, Shiv, thank you for inviting me up here to come and speak. And I've actually been looking forward to having an opportunity to come and share with the church here for almost 2 years. Tom mentioned we got in touch just shortly after I came to Mission to the World. I wear a lot of different hats, and I'll talk a little bit about that and what my role is with Mission to the World. But one of those hats is, as was mentioned, is to reach out to churches within our denomination, within the Presbyterian Church in America, to say, hey, how can we as a missions organization, as a mission sending organization, come alongside you to help you send missionaries well, to raise up missionaries and then send them out? So that's been a lot of what Tom and I have talked about. I'll touch on this 1% challenge that was mentioned earlier as well. But what I want to do this morning is I want to start with a story of mine, one of my personal experiences that I'm not terribly proud of, but I think it will build context for what we're talking about this morning. And this is a story that I call a missed opportunity in Biloxi, Mississippi. So I was just mentioning earlier, I'm not a Southerner, but I have spent a little bit of time in the South. And a little bit of that time was in Biloxi, Mississippi, which, as a guy who spent most of his life in California, is cross-cultural. So I've been with MTW for 2 years now, as of this month. But before that, I spent 8 years as an active duty Air Force officer. I spent some time all over the country, all within the United States. But a little bit of that time was in Biloxi, Mississippi, at an Air Force base called Keesler Air Force Base. And I was there for training, to do some air traffic control training there. And one of the interesting things about the U.S. military is from time to time, they will allow non-U.S. citizens to come do our training as professional development for them. And in this case, we had several international students from militaries from around the world who were doing our course. Most of them were already trained air traffic controllers in their own country, but they came as an opportunity to look good on their resumes when they go back. And in this class, we had several from the Arab states. One in particular was from Qatar. Now, what you may or may not know about Qatar, I did not know this at the time, but like most Arab countries, the rate of Christianity, or the number of Christians in Qatar, is incredibly low. There's an organization out there you may know called the Joshua Project. They track kind of the state of Christianity in the world. And they really focus on unreached people groups. And the Gulf State Arabs, Arabs who live in UAE, who live in Qatar, are listed among the unreached people groups. And by their numbers, less than 1% are professing Christ in any, we'll call it, form of Christianity. So we're talking evangelical, we're talking Catholics. So less than 1%. Of those, less than a tenth of a point, 0.08% are what we would consider evangelical. Let's not use the political term evangelical, just broadly evangelical Christian in Qatari Arabs. So well less than 1% are Christians. So I get to training out in Biloxi, and sure enough, there's a Qatari guy who's there. He's brought his wife with him. He's brought his, I believe, two children at the time with him, and he's going to spend the next 4 months in the U.S. studying with me at this training course. Over the time that we had together, we became friends. You know, he was alone here. He was an outsider. The other international students were from Saudi Arabia, and they wanted nothing to do with him. They have some pretty tense relationships between Saudi Arabia and Qatar. And so he was alone. So being the cultural chameleon that I am, and I say that partially in jest, but also my experience has led me to be a real connoisseur of culture. I really enjoy culture. I spent a lot of time in other cultures in my life. I thought, I'll be this guy's friend, right? I'll try to make him feel welcome. And so I did. We ended up living in the same apartment complex during that time. I had my wife with me and our two young children there as well. And so we built a friendship. At the end of 4 months, he left and went back to Qatar, and I went back to Panama City, where I was stationed at the time. What I didn't do in those 4 months was take the opportunity to share the gospel with this man, or with his wife, or with his kids that were there. And I look at that as one of the biggest missed opportunities of my life. He was a man outside of his home culture, living far from everything he knew, interacting with maybe the only Christian he had met in his life. And I missed the opportunity to share the gospel with him because of a lot of different reasons. And we're going to talk about some of those today. But I think that what that story reminds me of is why it is so important that we talk about how we interact and cross cultures in our local context. I know there were several hands that went up about people who have had the opportunity to go and serve overseas in missions. But we often forget that we are called to do it in our workplace, that we're called to cross cultures for Christ with our neighbors next door. I live in Denver. We don't have a whole lot of, it's not a hugely diverse city like Seattle is, the greater Seattle area. But we've got people in our neighborhood. We had a refugee family at the school that my daughter goes to that had been placed there from Congo. That there are people in our lives, people from places that are unreached today, that we have an opportunity, and not just an opportunity, but a calling to cross cultures, to engage with the gospel. And so with that in mind, I want to spend our time here this morning that I've got doing a couple of things. One, I want us to talk about what is mission, since we're going to be using that term a lot, very briefly, and why should we care about it? I appreciate what Shiv already shared with us this morning, and I'm hoping not to repeat too much of what he said. But then I also want to take that and say, how do we practically do that? Like, how do we practically engage other cultures in our midst with the gospel? And hopefully, my challenge, and you'll hear this at the end again, my hope is that when we walk out of here today, we'll all commit to doing one thing more. Taking one, what I call one incremental step forward towards engaging others of a different culture with the gospel. So let's go ahead and dig into it. Missions is an interesting word today. It has gotten a lot more confusing, I think, than it used to be. People are using missions and missional and missionary in a lot of different ways today. But I want us to hit just very briefly on what is mission. So, and I would love to hear interaction back, please, this morning, so I don't have to listen to my own voice this whole time. To you, when I use the term missions, cross-cultural missions, what does that mean? What are some like defining characteristics of what it means to do missions?
Becoming a friend?
Sharing the gospel with people from other cultures.
Yeah.
Languages. Faith.
Tom?
Just speaking in more general terms, like maybe somebody from the Air Force might think of it, it's, you've got a plan. I mean, you're doing something very specific and intentional.
Yeah.
I think that's part of it.
Any other thoughts?
Going?
Yeah, that's great. I kind of pared it down for our purposes this morning to a couple of key characteristics, defining characteristics, so that we can all be on the same page when we're talking about this morning. The first is that missions is cross-cultural. And I don't mean necessarily, I would just say, I guess, that it is the crossing of boundaries. In order to be doing missions, as opposed to evangelism, we are crossing boundaries. So we're crossing language boundaries, perhaps, cultural boundaries, geographical boundaries, often, though not always. And so when we're talking about missions, we're talking cross-cultural. Second, we're talking local and global. I think historically, the church has thought of missions as global. And I work for a global missions organization. What we do, 99% of what we do is outside of America. And so I often have to remind myself that when we're talking about missions, we're talking global, but we're also talking local. And we're going to get into a few of the numbers, the statistics for the greater Seattle area about how global our this city is. But I think in the context of 2019, we need to talk about missions as both a local endeavor and a global endeavor, not one or the other. It's the gospel for the nations. Someone mentioned it's the sharing of the gospel. Like, missions is not just social justice. I think with my generation and those behind me, this is an important thing that we have to distinguish, that without presenting the gospel, it's not missions. We absolutely should be digging wells. We absolutely should be doing medical clinics and doing mercy and justice ministries. But without the gospel, it's not missions. It's just social justice. And the final thing that I would say is that missions is the mission of the church. It's for the church here, there, and everywhere. And what I mean by that is I think we often get caught up in the, we're Americans, we're Westerners, so we are missionaries. We do missions because we're Westerners. But missions is for the church in Issaquah, and it's also for the church in Rio, and it's for the church in Seoul. It is not a, when Christ gave the mission to the church in the Great Commission passages, he didn't give it to the church in America only. He gave it to the church, the big church, the global church. And so we have people who are coming to America right now to be missionaries to us. They are crossing cultures to us. Should have mentioned this morning that he is like a missionary coming to us to help share the gospel message in our context, to cross cultures, to bring the gospel message here. I've met some phenomenal men and women from South Korea who have been ministering in Japan for decades as missionaries to Japan from South Korea, from Brazilians all over Africa who have gone out to share the gospel. And so missions is for the church here, there, and everywhere. So with that in mind, the question is, why do we care about missions? Why do we care about crossing cultures for Christ, like as believers? Why, and as you guys see it, why should you care about, specifically, besides that they're just people, but specifically about the person who is not from America, who is working in your workplace or living in your neighborhood?
Because God cares.
Thank you. Yes. No one else needs to say anything because that's the answer. First, God cares. And looking at Scripture, it is everywhere. I did a search last week about where, like, scriptural references that have to do with the nations and God's love for the nations. And I just want to share a couple of them with you. I'm not even going to read the verses because there are just too many, but I want to kind of draw that picture for you about what God says about his care for the nation. So he says that he wants to bless the nations, and he wants to do it through his people. In Genesis 12, Genesis 18, 22, 26, 28, he talks about blessing the nations. Those are just a few of the passages, obviously. He talks about his name, that he wants his name to be known to all the nations. Exodus 9, Joshua 4, and 8, 1 Chronicles 16. This is, you know, obviously all Old Testament. He talks about he wants to be and will be worshipped by all the nations. Basically the entire book of Psalms. He desires that all the nations turn to him. Again, all the nations turn to him and be saved. You see that in Isaiah, throughout the book of Isaiah, Isaiah 45, Isaiah 49, 52. He talks... He calls his people, me and you, to share his love to the nations all throughout the New Testament. In the Great Commission passages we'll talk about here in a minute more specifically, but also in Acts, in Romans, in Galatians, in Philippians, in 1 Timothy, in 2 Peter, and 1 John. All of those whole passages that talk about our call to go and share the gospel amongst all people, amongst all nations. And finally, he talks about that the job, the mission, will not be done until all nations bow down to him. And they will. That all nations will bow down to him. In Revelations 5, 9, and 7, 9, and Revelation 15. And so we care, thank you, because God cares for the nations. That is his heart. He loves the diversity of the nations. He loves that there are cultural differences. There's beauty in that. And he cares that the nations, all people, bow down to him. And then secondly, we care because Jesus said we're to care. As followers of Christ, we have been told to care about the nations. Not just told, we've been commanded to. You know, as mentioned, come from predominantly a military life experience up until now. And I understand what a mission is. I understand when I'm told to do something, when I'm commanded to do something. It's happened every day for 8 years. Someone was telling me to do something. And I was given a mission to accomplish. And we as God's people, I think, often forget that we have been given a mission. Like, as followers of Christ, we have been told to go tell the nations, all people, about Christ. I'm not going to dive too far into the Great Commission passages, but there are a few things that I want to mention. So when we talk about the Great Commission passages, right, these are the words of Christ right before he goes or ascends into heaven for his people, telling them, hey, what do you do next? Right? He's about to leave, and he's like, I don't want these guys just to be standing around doing nothing until I come back. I'm giving them a job to do. And so in Matthew 28, 18 through 20, and I'm not going to read these, but Mark 16, 15 through 18, Luke 24, and John 20. So four Gospels, right? Four Great Commission passages. This isn't one of those things that doesn't end up in all of the Gospels. It's in all four. That tells me it's significant. Secondly, in three, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, it's the final recorded words of Christ. Three out of four Gospels, the last words we hear from Christ that are recorded for us today are, go tell people to the ends of the earth. Go to all the nations and tell them about Christ. Like, to me, again, that's significant. I don't think that's happenstance. That is the last words that we have. And so, with that in mind, we care because God cares. And we want to have the heart of God. We want to care about the things God cares about. And we care because we're told we're supposed to. We're told to care. And so that's kind of the background. That's the background of what we're talking about when we're talking about missions. We're talking about crossing cultures for Christ right here in our context. And so let's spend a few minutes getting, I think, a little more practical. A little more, how do we as believers, and me in Denver, you guys up here in Issaquah or whatever community you live in around here, how do we do that? And I think Shiv made a great point this morning talking about every culture, as we know, is different. And there's not like, I do this once and I'm golden. So a little bit more about me, because I can say this from experience, is I've had the opportunity, I'm a missionary kid. I grew up on the mission field in Israel and France. Two very different countries, two very different languages, two very different cultures. My parents worked with Palestinian students in Israel, so I was very young, but we were working in an Arab context there, and then working in France, both with Palestinian students studying in Paris as well as with French students. So I learned those cultures even as a young person. Spent time in California, its own thing. Montana, Florida, California again, Colorado now. But in the middle of that, I've also had the incredible opportunity to do short-term missions work of varying lengths of time on 6 out of 7 continents. Haven't been to Antarctica yet. It's on my bucket list. But I have spent a lot of time crossing cultures and trying to bring the gospel message there. But I have actually found it far harder to cross cultures here than any of those other places that I have been. I found it far more difficult, as I spoke about my Qatari friend, to cross cultures for Christ, not to cross cultures, but to cross cultures for Christ within my own context, within my local home context, within the place that I am comfortable living and working, than I ever did in Botswana or in Azerbaijan or in China or Australia. Like, it's way harder here. I'm going to talk a little bit about why that is here in a minute. But to get practical, what I've kind of done is I've tried to outline three basic steps, because in every one of those contexts that I mentioned, I had to start over. Even the difference between California, Montana, and then Florida, I had to start over and reassess the culture in which I was living in and working in and the people that I was talking to. As a Californian, I did not speak the same language as my friends in Panama City, Florida. Like, we didn't. And I had to relearn that culture as an outsider. But even when I'm back in California, I have to be reminded of these things. I have to start over and learn where I'm living and where I'm interacting. And so the three things, the three practical steps that I want us to talk about is, and I wish I tried to come up with like a pithy three same letter words, but I didn't, so I'm sorry. Learn, pray, engage. Learn, pray, engage. Those are the three things I want us to spend the rest of our morning talking about when it comes to how do we cross cultures for Christ in our local context. It starts with learning. I think wherever we're at, Shiv hit on this. You guys hit on this when you were saying about, like, what do you do when you get dropped into Thailand, right? I would drink a lot of coffee. And that's where I would make my friends and learn about culture. I'm a coffee guy. I actually had the chance to be in Thailand recently visiting some of our missionaries there. And they've actually got some great coffee shops in Bangkok, if you ever have the chance to go. But the same thing that you would do there is what you need to do here. You need to learn about the cross-cultural context in which you're living. And I don't mean, when I say learn, just saying like, oh, yep, there's a Chinese guy in my firm. Like, that's not learning. It's got to be more than that. And we're going to spend just a couple of minutes talking about your context here. You may already know a lot of this information. If so, I'm sorry to repeat it. But this is just kind of a 30,000-foot view of King County, where you guys are living and I assume living and working for the most part. So let's talk about King County. To give us a context for the type of people that we have the opportunity and the calling to be engaging with the gospel. 18% of those living here in King County were born outside of the U.S. It's 1 in 5. 1 in 5 people living here in this community were born outside of the United States. Of those, many from places like Japan, like Qatar, like the Arab states, places where the people of those areas are still unreached. 1 in 5. Of that, 9.6% were born in an Asian country, 2.6 in Europe, 2.2 in Latin America, and 3.7 other. So 1 in 5 born outside of the United States. Within the schools in Seattle, there are 129 different languages spoken. 129 languages in the schools here, if that's any context for the culture in which you guys are living. Between 2000 and 2014, just in Seattle, in King County, immigration increased 20% during that time. But also, it's important, I think, for us to note, as we think about engaging cross-culturally here, that poverty rates of foreign-born residents are double that of native residents. So of those one out of five, their rate of poverty is double that of someone who is born locally. Yeah.
So we see this more with Sacred Road, but do you also see defined culture from socioeconomic or stage of life, like student versus families, or poor versus wealthy?
I think when I'm talking about culture, well, I think there are so many, because we even talk like, you know, within our borders, the South versus the West Coast. You know, those are cultural differences. But specifically when we're talking about socioeconomic, it's normally not something that we would consider like in the cross-cultural, even though there are those components there, but generally we're speaking the same languages. We have most of the same basic understandings and worldview on things. So, but what I would say of, you know, Sacred Road as an example is they are huge. You know, we would, I would definitely categorize any work with Indigenous First Nations people to be cross-cultural because there's so much cultural difference, worldview difference that comes from their experience. Yeah. Thanks. To give a little more context, let's talk about refugees in the Seattle area, greater Seattle area, Seattle-Tacoma area. Washington as a state is the eighth largest refugee-serving state in the union. According to World Relief, in King County, they've resettled approximately 2,000 refugees in the last 2 years, 2017-2018, from 25 different countries. And just down the road in Tacoma, they are currently serving over 4,000 refugees being held at the Northwest Detention Center in Tacoma. 4,000 refugees hanging out just down the road that they are ministering to. Talk about opportunity to bring the gospel. And as you probably know, a large percentage of those are coming from unreached people. They're coming from the Arab states. They're coming from the 1040 window for taking it back a few years. You know, that used to be a big topic, still is. Immigration. I'm not going to get a lot into that because I don't have a lot of great numbers. But one thing I would point out is that in this greater, or excuse me, in King County, there are over 20,000 Japanese people living here in our community here. The Japanese people are the second largest unreached people group in the world. Still less than 1% of Japanese will profess Christ. That was already touched on you know, the threshold there. But there are 20,000 of the second largest unreached people group in the world living in King County, just waiting to be engaged with the gospel. And you may not know, but the chance of conversion goes up exponentially when they're outside of Japan, when anyone is outside of their home context. And so there is incredible opportunity to reach unreached people groups who are living here, right here in your neighborhoods. And last, international students. 28,000 international students, more actually, studying in Washington. Different colleges in Washington. It's the 11th state in the union, as far as numbers are concerned. But 28,000 international students. Again, the rate of students, of internationals, especially those from unreached people group, coming to know Christ, is exponentially higher when they are here than when they are back home. And so there are opportunities to know, opportunities to reach the unreached that we are called to take. So that is, on the learning side, just a taste of what you have going on here. And what I would encourage you as a first step is if you are not familiar with your neighborhood, with the school where your kids or your grandkids are going to school, with your workplace and the people who are working in your workplace, learn about it. And the reason is that as we learn, I think our hearts are changed. And as we learn, we begin to feel a calling to pray. Which we're going to talk about next. Some of you may have, over the years, come across the organization Operation World. They put out a book of unreached people groups. I think they've gone digital. Don't quote me on that. You may still be able to find copies laying around. But they have, for many years, put out a book that showed and taught about unreached people groups in the world. And as I have been out talking with missionaries with Mission to the World, with missionaries with other organizations, I cannot tell you how many, when I ask them, hey, how did you end up here? Say, I ended up here because I picked up a copy of Operation World, and I started reading it. I started learning about the needs of the world, and God used that to put it on my heart, and I started praying. I started praying for people that I was reading about in this book. And then all of a sudden, I've been in Thailand for 25 years. Like, I'm not joking that is one of the ways that God works. As we learn about culture, as we learn about other people and their needs, our heart is burdened, and then we pray. We pray as we go. And so before our next break, I think I got about 10 minutes here, we're going to talk about prayer. Missions does not happen without prayer. Whether that be local or global, missions does not happen without prayer. We have a couple with Mission to the World who served for many, many years in Berlin, both before the wall and after the wall. And one of their primary works that they did there was prayer ministry. And we still actually go every year. Mission to the World does a short-term trip several times a year and brings folks to Prayer Walk Berlin, certain areas of Berlin. And one of the things that they say about prayer, they actually do full-time prayer ministry now, is prayer is primary mission strategy. All those other things that we talked about earlier, the learning the culture, the drinking coffee, all of that is things that we do, yes, but without a foundation of prayer, it's not going to mean anything. Anyone who has spent time, I know especially those who raised their hands about having spent time on the mission field, I'm sure can attest to say that, like, without the power of prayer, it doesn't happen. You can have all the money in the world, but it's not going to happen without prayer. I'm going to read you a quote here from John Piper. There is a fantastic sermon that he gave when I think he was at his best in the 80s. I don't have the title here, but if you Google prayer and missions, John Piper prayer and missions, you'll find it. And everyone should listen to it because it is fantastic. But he's talking about exactly that. He's talking about the role of prayer in the work of missions around the globe. And I'm going to read this in its entirety, so please bear with me. He says in that sermon, the proclamation of the gospel in word and deed is the work of missions. And prayer is the power that wields the weapons of the word. And the word is the weapon by which the nations will be brought to faith and obedience. The word of God, the gospel of the kingdom, is the weapon that God designed to use, in penetrating the kingdom of darkness and gathering the children of light from all nations. So again, the word is the weapon. But he says, not only has God made the accomplishment of his global purpose and salvation hang on the preaching of the word. Okay, again, we're talking the word here, right? This is the word that is the weapon. But he has also made the success of the preaching of the word hang on prayer. So I'm going to say that again. He also made the success of the preaching of the word hang on prayer. God's goal to be glorified in a world full of white-hot worshipers from every tongue and tribe and nation will not succeed without the powerful proclamation of the gospel by people like you and me. Again, the word. And that gospel will not be proclaimed in power to all the nations without the persevering, earnest, global, faith-filled prayers of God's people. Again, and the gospel will not be proclaimed in power to all the nations without the persevering, earnest, global, faith-filled prayer of God's people. This is the awesome place of prayer in the purpose of God for the world. So what he's saying there, I know there's a lot, is word and deed and the work of missions hangs on prayer. Because prayer is powerful. And he talks throughout the sermon, he's focusing primarily on in Ephesians. But he talks about that prayer is meant for war. We as believers are at war. Let's not pretend we're not. We are soldiers for Christ. And again, I think I personally identify particularly with this sentiment. But I think it's important for us all to think about that prayer breaks down walls. Prayer heals. And as people here working in local contexts, that same prayerful weapon is for the home front. That is something that we need to be using and engaging earnestly and powerfully here in our own community. So we take what we learned about our culture. We take our context, our neighborhood, our schools, our church, our workplaces. And we take that and we start praying. And we're going to spend a little bit of time prayer here at the end as well. But here are a few of the things that we can pray for. And this is an area that I would particularly challenge you to start doing if you're not, or to do more if you already are, and that is praying. You can start praying for the unreached right here. You can pray for those who are in the ELL program that you've got here at the church. By name, even if you're not volunteering as part of the program, you can get their names and you can start praying. You can pray for Sacred Road. And for all those that some of you have interacted with, and I know not everyone has been there, but you can pray for them. You can start praying for the 20,000 Japanese in King County, that there'll be a revival here with the Japanese. And then, God willing, they will go back and share in their own context. You can be praying for the 4,000 refugees being held in Tacoma, some of which are believers, most of them are not. And you can pray for them that God will work in their hearts. You can pray over your workplaces and your neighborhoods for new friendships within your spheres of influence. That maybe the guy or gal that you see out walking their dog, talking with their kids in a different language, that God will open up a door for you to build a friendship, build a relationship. You can pray with us, with me, the Matthew 9, 36 through 38. We're going to talk about this more later, but you can pray to the Lord of the harvest that he'll send out workers. That is one of the things that our organization, Mission to the World, is praying for right now. We're praying for workers both to go locally and globally. You can pray that someone from your church says, hey, you know what, I think I'm going to go work at Sacred Road for the next 3 years. I'm going to work full time doing ministry there. Or, hey, I'm going to go and I'm going to go overseas. I think God's calling me to go to Thailand, go to India, go to, you fill in the blank. But you can pray with us that God will raise up a new generation of goers, because the world needs it. Because the mission isn't done. We haven't accomplished the mission. All the nations don't know Christ. All the nations are not worshiping Christ. So you can pray with us for that, for workers. You can pray also for more workers within your own context. You know, not when Christ turned to his disciples and said, pray to the Lord of the harvest. Some of those who prayed were sent far from home. And some of those continued ministry right there in their local context. And so you can pray for more people to step up for the ELL as needed. More people will be willing to sacrifice their time, their money, their energy to go minister at Sacred Road, or to go up north and build a new local relationship, if you don't already have one, with the MTW team up working with the Lumis, or you're filling the context. But pray that more people will step up to the plate. As I kind of close out this time before we go on break, what I would do is remind you, though, of one really important fact. If, as you learn and as you pray, God will change your heart. I look at Matthew 9:38, and we don't talk about it as much as I think we need to be in the church. That's a command that Christ gave his disciples to.
Can we have somebody read it, those verses?
Sure. Would anyone read? I would just read it. Matthew 9, and we're going to go 36 through 38. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field." So when Christ said that, he commanded them to pray to the Lord of the harvest, to send out workers into his harvest field. Not too long after that, who was it who was going out into the harvest field? It was those people he had just commanded to pray. And so what I would encourage you is, be prepared for God to work in your heart and those around you. If you pray, I believe if you pray to God this prayer, God is going to raise up people from your church to serve in this kind of capacity. And he's going to work in your heart to start providing you with opportunities to engage in your workplaces or your your neighborhoods, your church. I say that not as a word of caution, but as a word of expectancy. That if you choose to learn, you're going to be driven to pray. And if you choose to pray, you're going to be driven to do something about it. And so with that, and we're going to have some time for some questions on this here at the very end, but we will go ahead and take a short break, maybe like five, seven minutes, and then come back and talk about, okay, so with all that, what do we do? How can we engage more? What are some steps that we can take before closing out our time today? So grab some more coffee and snacks.